The Capital Investment Committee hearing for April 8th is called to order. We do have a quorum. Vice Chair Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for April 3rd?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Ryer, move approval of the minutes for April 3rd. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Can you check the microphone for us, please?
It works.
Okay, thank you. So the minutes are approved. The members will be hearing more bills on an informational basis only with amendments offered for reference only. And first up is Chair Stevenson. I understand you have a DE amendment for reference. Please explain the DE and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill relates to the Haven for Heroes organization up in Anoka, which operates on the campus of the historic State Hospital in Anoka. So we have both the modern State Hospital in Anoka, but we also have a historic State Hospital that dates back over 100 years. And that campus is filled with several buildings that are being repurposed to serve veterans in our communities. So Haven for Heroes, without any state support so far, in fact, this funding that I'm asking the committee for today would be the first public dollars to ever go from the state of Minnesota to Haven for Heroes operation. But Haven for Heroes has restored three cottages on the campus of the Anoka State Hospital to house and provide services for veterans, including the veteran who's sitting to my right, who you'll hear from in just a minute. Now they have the opportunity to restore the auditorium building on the campus, which they would use to deliver programming, including having a shop and maybe a gym and other services for veterans there. We also are interested, and we're on the early stages of this discussion, about establishing a museum at the historic State Hospital to chronicle the history of the State Hospital and the way that mental health was handled in Minnesota, 100 years ago. This is a place, members, where lobotomies happened, where there were straitjackets and electroshock therapy. A very tragic and unfortunate history that should be remembered. And so we're asking for some money as part of this to start the process of that. Last thing I'll just briefly mention, the underlying bill was general fund dollars and canceled an appropriation to another not-for-profit. We're going to shift away from that approach, and we're asking the committee to do general fund, or excuse me, general obligation bonding with Anoka County as the recipient of that, since they own the hospital campus. And with that, Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, I have a veteran here who works with Haven for Heroes and would like to tell a story.
Welcome, please identify yourself.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dustin Bernoffel, a 14-year Army veteran who struggles with substance abuse. I'm actually going on 10 months sober, and it is thanks to the Haven that I've been able to accomplish that. I have never been able to proceed further than 2 months of sobriety. It was the community that I was able to be a part of that has allowed me to sustain sobriety, as well as attend school where I am a student senate vice president. And it's all been thanks to the Haven. I've seen numerous success stories of individuals go from complete addiction to full integration back into society as effective members. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for your service. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, quick closing comments, Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I should have mentioned for Chair Pulowski's reference that Dustin here is Vice President of the Student Senate at Anoka Ramsey Community College.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yes, that's correct. So there you go. Thank you,
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Next on the agenda, House File 3210, Representative Purcell. Welcome, Representative Purcell. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. House File 3210, Cooperative Manufactured Housing Infrastructure Grant Program. We know housing is an issue all across Minnesota. Challenges are many, and our response must be varied and innovative. Creating affordable housing for working families is an area I'm deeply concerned about and want to do everything I can to show communities large and small that home ownership is possible. Last year, the legislature created a Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program carried by Representative Frederick. And this proposal before you is to have bonding dollars be added to the grant fund, as well as making it so that manufactured homes that would be on municipally owned land with public infrastructure could qualify for these funds as well. I've put my shoulder into a project making progress in Northfield called the New Leaf Co-op that I would hope could qualify and apply for these funds to show a new model for affordable working family home ownership. I firmly believe we can create dignified housing in a sustainable, community-centered manner, and with Minnesota-made manufactured homes and funds from this committee could go to communities like mine in greater Minnesota willing to try a new model to show that it can be done here. And I have a testifier, City Administrator Ben Martig from the City of Northfield.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Ben Martig, City Administrator in Northfield, Minnesota. So as Representative Purcell said, the options for this type of housing doesn't currently typically exist for home ownership models. We find ourselves with without a sufficient supply of home ownership opportunities for affordable homes for working families. This has a cascading effect in Northfield and other communities. It's shortage of workers, fewer kindergartners enrolling in our community schools, and increasingly squeezed tax base. As we work to remedy the situation, we must think outside of the box and envision how we can do this workforce housing differently. While municipalities have a desire to innovate, including Northfield, often those innovations in the housing sector come with barriers, unfamiliarity with the housing type, misconceptions about ownership structures, and differing infrastructure needs. However, when incentives exist for communities to explore new models of housing, particularly workforce home ownership, those barriers begin to disappear. Further, as Minnesota looks at the housing crisis as a whole, perhaps one of the largest gaps in our approach is the lack of affordable ownership opportunities, particularly for first-generation home buyers. Programs that encourage the development of affordable home ownership and allow for Minnesotans to build equity are sorely needed. And this proposal accomplishes that. We have models for innovations in other states like this, including particularly New Hampshire. So in conclusion, as we tackle the affordable housing crisis at the local level, we need as many options as possible. Affordable housing toolbox is needed, and this is an additional tool that could really help us. We also need programs to help incentivize municipalities to explore new methods of housing, whether that be in new construction types or ownership structures. The desire for something different is there. Municipalities just need to remove the obstacles so that we can move them forward. This program will help to accomplish those goals for passage. Thank you for your consideration. I'm here for questions.
Thank you. Members, any discussions? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell. I certainly share your interest and concern in doing more for greater Minnesota in the area of housing. In fact, just this last weekend, I was reading some comments on housing in greater Minnesota. And I just want to throw this out there, and no intent for debate today, but overregulation and prevailing wage in greater Minnesota are two of the biggest drawbacks in terms of being able to afford these types of housing units in greater Minnesota. So I just wanted to be on the record of saying that.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any additional questions? So, Representative Purcell, I just want to note for the public and for the record, you know, I think on lines 1.12 to 1.14, talking about in-kind contributions, I just want to make sure that for whatever language move forward, it will work with some of the full funding statutes that we have under bonding. And so if you can continue to work with nonpartisan staff and maybe MMB just to make sure the language works as this concerns going forward, I think that will be helpful.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is up in the Housing Committee tomorrow, and so there will be an amendment making sure that the funding in the particular fund is used as originally intended, and then this is additional funds for this little bit variation on the project.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Close the comments on the bill. Or Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Representative Purcell. The appropriation for $10 million, how many housing units would that cover? Is it 60,000 per lot? So,
Representative Purcell.
I believe it's 60,000 in total, so it would be 30,000 per lot with the $1 to $1 match. And I was an English major, so I can't do that quick math. And then, of course, it is scalable as well.
Representative Scraba.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess my question was more, so the $10 million would be directly related to the 60 so I could divide that myself if I wanted to. There's no other costs involved in that.
Representative Purcell.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know if City Administrator March. Okay, I'm seeing nods that that's true.
Okay.
Don't want to do math on the fly here.
Representative Scraba.
That's Chair Lee and Representative Purcell. Thank you. Like everyone else in rural Minnesota, if there is a better way of creating workforce housing in a rural area, I would welcome it. We need lots where we are too. So whatever we can do to do it, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Quick closing comments, Representative Purcell.
Thank you. There, our community in Northfield is considering this. There's a community in Roseau, Minnesota, also considering this new type of workforce housing. So I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Next on the agenda, House File 4885. Representative Purcell, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Northfield's historic Bridge Square is the natural gathering place in downtown Northfield. In the winter, it's the literal center of our winter walk where Santa sits for that magical evening in December. In the summer, it's where families gather to visit the Riverwalk Market every Saturday or listen to free music during the Vintage Band Festival, fish along the Cannon River, or just sit on a bench near the fountain. Since the COVID-19 pandemic, the road that divides Bridge Square and the sidewalk next to the Cannon River has been blockaded seasonally to create more pedestrian-friendly space and access. And this space has been used. The City of Northfield has been going through an extensive community engagement process centered around our parks and public spaces since I served on the Riverfront Development Advisory Board in 2018. Since that time, many conversations have taken place that show the community's interest in improving the space in Bridge Square to better match how it's already being used and to expand its access and uses. This proposal allocates $3.75 million to the City of Northfield to fund some pre-design, design, and construction improvements to this integral part of the Northfield community. And I see that you have the handout, and we'll pass it to City Administrator Marte.
Welcome. Please identify yourself again and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Ben Martig, City Administrator of Northfield, Minnesota. As Representative said, this is a strategic investment for Minnesota's history as well as the tourism industry, not just in Northfield. Northfield's downtown is federally designated historic district. As a representative said, the park is as well. It's a unique tourist destination for Minnesotans, but we also draw from across the country and even the world related to our unique history. In particular, our annual Defeat of Jesse James Days is one of Minnesota's largest all-volunteer, or is the largest, Minnesota's all-volunteer community festivals, and we have over 100,000 visitors each year. The celebration honors the townspeople who thwarted a bank raid attempt by Jesse James in the Cole Younger game that ultimately led to their defeat following that bank raid failed attempt. This regional park, as Representative Purcell said, is part of a larger vision to really use the river to enhance our economy. It's not just simply a parks plan, it's an economic development strategy that benefits our local community and attracts a regional audience. We're in our final construction document phase. The State Historical Society is involved in the review. We have a tremendous amount of local financial resources that are drained from other projects that we're working on, capital projects. So your funding would be critically important to actually see this project forward, and would greatly appreciate your support in this project. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Purcell, once again, you're into an issue that I'm very interested in. You and I maybe need to start working more together on these things. The historic bridges, I just had a bill drafted, and it was introduced last week by Representative McDonald, that creates a fund of $5 million for historic bridge repair in Minnesota. And so I'm sure that that'll meet with a favorable reception. But, you know, we have these bridges across the state of Minnesota, and you know, history is important, and these structures are important. So, I'm certainly interested in restoring them.
Representative Purcell, or to the city administrator. So, number three on the map, is that where that's the current fountain, if I remember correctly, from my days over at Carleton College, where whoever wins the football games, the Eagles is pointed. I know that Majority Leader Long is here too, so I think we're quite interested. So is that where that is located?
Chair Lee, that is correct. That will remain. There might be some enhancements to that, but that's a historic feature that's going to be there. So, yes, we do honor the winning teams every year with Olaf and Carlton. And certainly this park is a draw to the students, our workforce housing for students. Part of the charm of our community is what draws these future leaders of Minnesotans to those colleges in addition to the great education they get there.
Carlton ever been there?
So can you tell us where is the eagle facing right now? Is that Carlton College?
Mr. Chair, as an Ole, I know you went to Carlton, and another member of the committee, Representative Zhang, also an Ole. It doesn't really matter which way the eagle is facing. I represent both colleges, and they're both wonderful.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Carroll.
So, Mr. Chair, I take it that the eagle's pointing the other way.
Thank you, Representative Carroll.
Looking straight up. No participation trophies here.
Seeing no other questions, closing comments. Representative Purcell.
Thank you so much for hearing this idea that is a real enhancement for our community and for giving us the time today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Next on the agenda, House File 5156, the Majority Leader, Representative Long. Welcome, Leader Long. Please proceed. And I understand you have an amendment for reference. Please proceed with the amendment and then go on with your presentation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, each state is allowed to send two statues to Congress to represent them. Minnesota's two statues currently are Maria Sanford, installed in 1958, and Henry Maurer Rice, installed in 1916. Like Minnesota, many states have chosen to submit one civic leader and one political leader. For example, Kansas has sent Amelia Earhart and Dwight Eisenhower. California has sent Father Junipero Serra and Ronald Reagan. Maria Sanford, I believe, has stood the test of time. An education pioneer, she was one of the first women to serve as a college professor. Mr. Maurer Rice was an early leader in our state in helping facilitate statehood and served as one of its first U.S. senators. But in the more than a century since Mr. Maurer Rice's statue was sent, Minnesotans have accomplished much on the national stage. I believe it is indisputable that the Minnesotan who has had the greatest impact on national politics is a Hubert Humphrey. The process to change a statue is that the state has to pay for a new statue to be made, for it to be shipped to D.C., and to ship the existing statue back to Minnesota, and that is what the bill before us would do today. We would use the design of the Humphrey statue that stands on our own state capitol grounds and would ensure that the Maurer Rice statue finds a suitable location to be displayed in Minnesota, perhaps a certain historic square in Rice County might be an appropriate location for it. I am proposing that our state update this important representation of a statue in our nation's capital to reflect the history that has transpired since 1916 and select Hubert Humphrey to represent us. And I'd like to turn my remaining time to noted Humphrey biographer James Traub.
Thank you, Leader Long. Mr. Traub, please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is James Traub. I'm a journalist and a historian, and I'm the author of True Believer, Hubert Humphrey's Quest for a More Just America. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about Humphrey's achievements. Hubert Humphrey was one of the towering figures of 20th century American politics, a liberal champion and a resolute pragmatist, who was not only willing but eager to compromise, to work with rivals in order to advance the public good. Though in the course of his career, Humphrey was associated with an astonishing array of issues, labor rights, full employment, nuclear disarmament, foreign aid, the Peace Corps, I'd like to focus my remarks today on the great cause of his life, civil rights. Humphrey grew up in the all-white world of small-town South Dakota, yet his hatred of injustice and his unwavering faith in human equality shaped his politics from the moment he took office as mayor of Minneapolis in 1945. At this time, the great obstacle to national civil rights legislation was the southern wing of the Democratic Party. At the 1948 Democratic Convention, the 37-year-old Mayor Humphrey, already a national figure, was chosen by his fellow liberals to lead what looked like a futile struggle to include in the party's platform a commitment to end Jim Crow law. Senior party officials, including President Truman's political advisors, warned Humphrey that if he went through with his plans, he would divide the party and cost it the upcoming election and, not incidentally, destroy his own career. Humphrey agonized over the decision before concluding that he had to do the right thing, whatever the cost. In a speech heard by perhaps 60 million Americans, Humphrey told the delegates that the time had come for America, quote, to get out of the shadow of states' rights and walk forthrightly into the bright sunshine of human rights. Miraculously, Humphrey's plank passed, committing the party then and forever after to civil rights. That November, Humphrey was elected to the Senate from Minnesota. The most gregarious of men, he soon befriended members of both parties and most of the leading Southerners. From Lyndon Johnson, he learned the arts of legislation. In 1964, President Johnson asked Humphrey to guide the Civil Rights Act through the Senate. The Southerners locked the chamber into an interminable filibuster. And through patience, guile, charm, discipline, and sheer hard work, Humphrey and his lieutenants broke the filibuster, and the Senate passed the most important civil rights law since Reconstruction. As vice president, and in his return to the Senate for the last years of his life, Hubert Humphrey remained a passionate defender of civil rights. But in those two moments, 1948 and 1964, he transformed and elevated our nation. Humphrey was a modest man who never ceased to feel gratitude for his good fortune. We today owe him our thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trout. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and the Majority Leader Long. I have signed on as a co-author of this bill, not because I'm a tremendous admirer of Hubert Humphrey and the things that he did, but because I think it is certainly more fitting at this time in 2024 that we have someone in Washington who has the stature of the last century behind him, whereas I think the memories of Henry Rice and his time have passed us by. I certainly am not in favor of doing anything adverse to the statue of Henry Rice. Bring him home. We could start the Bring Henry Home campaign here and find a suitable place for him where he would be more meaningful to the people of Minnesota, just as we would have a more meaningful representative of Minnesota in Washington. I will say that I did meet Hubert Humphrey once. When I, Representative Pulowski, was vice president of the Student Association of St. Cloud State, there was a reception. And the Senator Humphrey had spoken, and so we went over across the street to the reception in the Student Center, and a young lady accompanied me in this, and we went through the line and met Senator Humphrey. And we stayed around a little bit, and then we across the hall, we were going out the door to leave, and darn if Senator Humphrey didn't yell across the room, "Watch out for him, Mary. He's a Republican." And that was my contact with Senator Humphrey.
Leader Long.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I love that story, and I think it does speak to Hubert Humphrey's willingness to engage with all types, right? As Mr. Chobb noted, he was a noted bipartisan in the Senate and one who fought as often with his own party as with the other party, particularly on civil rights.
Thank you, Mr. I might add, he was laughing when he said it.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Long, like Representative Erdahl, I think history shouldn't be hidden. I think history should be embraced. We just heard from one of our other applicants this morning or this afternoon saying history is very important and we should be celebrating history. So if we want to exchange, for lack of a better word, the two, is there somewhere else on the Capitol area where we could still take person? And I say this just because I just want to see I don't want to see history erased. I want to see history embraced, because if there are mistakes made by any of us and we're touted in history greater later as we're great people, and then we find out our mistakes are bad, it still shouldn't affect the history that was made. So I would hope somewhere we could find somewhere for Mr. Rice's statute so that it can help history. That's Leader, just a statement. Thank you, Mr.
Leader Long.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, Representative Scribble. That is certainly the intent. The intent is to bring the statute back home and to find a location in Minnesota that would be suitable where Minnesotans could see the statue more often than tucked away in the current corner in Statuary Hall where it is now among the less notable statues. That's kind of where its home is at the moment. And I think we could find a home in Minnesota where it could be seen more regularly.
Leader Long, I will take that as your closing comment then.
Yes.
Thank you so very much for being here.
Thank you, Chair Lee.
Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Chair Lizgar. First one, House File 3948. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Lee and members for hearing House File 3948, an infrastructure bond request for Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District. The sewer district is a regional facility serving St. Louis County range cities, Chisholm, Buell, Kinney, and as well as Great Scott Township. With increasing interest from developers, residential, commercial, on highway, the 169 corridor of the Iron Range, the sewer district is seeking funding to design and construct the systems. And here with me, I have the executive director of the sewer district.
Welcome, director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee and members of the House Capital Investment Committee, my name is Norman Miranda, and I am executive director of the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District in Chisholm. Representative Lizgar, thank you for introducing the House File 3948. It's an infrastructure bonding request for our sewer district. Our sewer district was established in 2009 by the Minnesota Legislature and was designed to convey and treat wastewater from the district's member communities, which include the cities of Chisholm, Buell, Kinney, and Town of Great Scott. Construction of the advanced wastewater facility and wastewater conveyance system began in 2010 and was completed in 2017 with the addition of mercury removal technology. As a discharger to the Great Lakes Basin, the district's discharge permit has some of the most stringent discharge limits in the state. We're proud of the fact the facility has maintained 100% compliance with those discharge limits, including mercury, from startup to date. Our advanced treatment facility was designed to accommodate future residential, commercial, and industrial flows. However, the district's wastewater conveyance system servicing our member communities was designed to address immediate needs. The district's comprehensive plan envisioned phased development of the district's infrastructure along the Highway 169 corridor from Great Scott, Kinney, Buell, and Chisholm to accommodate desperately needed residential, commercial, and industrial development. With increasing interest from developers in residential, commercial, and industrial projects along the Highway 169 corridor, the district is seeking funding to design and construct conveyance system improvements and capacity upgrades. The funding provided by House File 3948 will provide additional capital equipment, improvements, upgrades, and facilities for conveyance and pumping of increased flows critical to providing service to potential projects. Mr. Chair, members, Representative Lizgar, thank you for your time and your consideration. I would be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Director. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, close the comments. Representative Lizgar.
Appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lizgar. Next on the agenda, House File 4531. Chair Lizgar, please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair Lee and members, for hearing House File 4531, a bonding request for a new community center in Morecambe Township. This community center is the largest single structure serving a large geographical rural area in St. Louis County and northeastern Itasca. In an area with a gigantic area with a population estimated between 1,700 and 1,800 residents around there. In Morecambe, like many townships and community centers, a premier space is what they're looking for. And once again, in rural Minnesota, they don't have a whole lot, and this means a great deal to them. So with me, I have Sasha Leto from Morecambe Township to speak.
Thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Lizegard. I am the clerk of, my name is Sasha Leto. I am the clerk of Morecambe Township, and I'm not here to tell you how important community centers are for rural Minnesota, because as legislators, you already know that they are the backbone and the heart of every small town. I'm here to share how important this particular structure to our area and the people who we serve depend on it to remain open and functioning. The building is critical to a population of approximately 1,800 year-round residents and seasonally will grow to a host over 8,000 people, as our area is considered a mecca for tourism located between Lake Vermilion and Side Lake, with nearby McCarthy Beach State Park, 8 additional campgrounds, and we're directly connected to the ATV and snowmobile trails. Some would say boastfully that it is one of the best hunting areas in the state of Minnesota. It is the center point for Northeast Itasca Rescue, Bearville First Responders, to connect people to LifeLink, also known as Life Flight. We have a 35 to 45 minute delay time to the closest hospital from our geographic region. Due to the time being critical in an emergency event, we are in the process of constructing an EMS First Responders building also in our township to provide our area with faster medical response times, and this proposed new community center would also act as an emergency center point for that. This building, to give you an idea, it hosts 12 to 15 events a month. It's our election polling place to host our elections. We conduct all our township government operations, EMS, fire, trainings, and meetings. It is our children's playground and movie theater. Book club, men's coffee club, the place we hold family reunions, holiday gatherings, craft fairs, potlucks, and a gathering place for our veterans. The place we say goodbye to loved ones at our all our funerals, the home to many receptions, and also where we celebrate our high school graduates. More notably, it is the home of our famous 103-year-old Bear River Fair. We had an engineering study done of the current structure, as we had hopes of remodeling the building to make it ADA compliant and to resolve some of the larger structural issues. The study resulted that it would be more cost effective to build a new facility. The engineers determined it would take approximately $1.9 million to rehabilitate just the main floor of the structure and the exterior, which would not even touch the larger issues that we have, such as the attic, the basement, the crumbling front steps that are tied into our foundation, nor that we have to put garbage cans in our great hall to catch water that leaks from our roof. The bottom line is, if we're talking infrastructure in rural Minnesota, the building is critical to the people who live and work here. And if we do not do something, this building will no longer exist. We are a low to moderate income geographic area, and our township alone carries a very high levy to support the repairs needed and to keep that building operating. Our ask is for the demolition funding for a demolition of our current building to construct a new facility that is cost effective, energy efficient, ADA compliant, and meets the needs of our geographical region, encompassing northeastern Itasca County and northwestern St. Louis County. Despite our rural location and the size of our service area, we have never requested assistance from our state legislature. This is our greatest need in terms of infrastructure and rural development, and if we are one Minnesota, I'm asking you to consider a request, as we are in great need at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Clerk Leto. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Representative Lizegard. What role are you in at Morecambe Township?
I am the clerk.
Clerk. I'm a co-author on this because it is rural. And this is part of the district that I represent that uses the other side of the line, the other side of the road. So it's all in one area, but it benefits everyone. And the EMS alone, the thing we're tackling right now, 45 minutes from anything. I mean, it's hard to imagine you can be in Minnesota anywhere and be 45 minutes to this day away from a hospital. It's just in the ambulance service, that's how long it takes to get there. So I cannot stress enough, it's a good project. It's going to help a lot of folks up there. 15 times a month it's used. So it's used a lot. It's needed a lot. And I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Scrabble. Chair Lizegard, any closing comments?
Yeah, the truth is, without help, this doesn't happen. And to the very things that Representative Scrabble said, is it wide variety of things that this thing is going to take care of, and we just need to support it. So I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 3348, Representative Coulter. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Excuse me. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today presenting my bill, House File 3348. But really, I am here on behalf of the entire city of Bloomington. With a population of nearly 90,000, Bloomington is the fourth largest city in the state and the third largest in the Twin Cities area. Our state's largest tourist attraction, and I might add our largest individual property taxpayer, is located at the Mall of America, nearly 40 million people visiting annually. We're home to corporate headquarters for Health Partners, Toro, Seagate, and Dairy Queen. And with nearly 10,000 hotel rooms, we have about as many as Minneapolis and downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul combined. And I make these points really to illustrate that Bloomington is far more than a bedroom community with a big mall. We are a major contributor to Minnesota's economy and to what the metro area has to offer. And when we talk about facilities in Bloomington, it is relevant, that is relevant to impact and usage. So House File 3348 would provide $4.5 million to support renovations to three athletic field facilities in Bloomington. Dred Scott Playfield, Gene Kelly Playfield, and two facilities at Valleyview Park, the Red Haddocks Field, and the Kent Herbeck Field, named for one of two Minnesota Twins greats with roots in Bloomington. Combined, these facilities have nearly 600,000 visitors, representing hundreds of teams and fans from across Minnesota and beyond, including, as I just recently learned, Minnesota softball's premier fast pitch tournament, the 10U Monster Championships, that attract 90 teams from across the state. So with that, I'll turn things over to our city manager, Jamie Verbrugge.
Welcome, City Manager. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Jamie Verbrugge. I'm the City Manager in Bloomington. Appreciate support from Representative Coulter. The Dred Scott Playfield, Valleyview Park, and Gene Kelly Playfield are regional sports complexes. When we put forward requests of the legislature, we want to make sure that we are true to the spirit of these bonding requests, that they are serving a regional nature. And so I just want to share with you some information today to demonstrate that these truly are projects of regional significance. The fields serve as the home for Jefferson and Kennedy High School softball, baseball, and soccer varsity teams, United Christian Academy soccer from several communities across the South Metro, more than 150 adult teams, five youth athletic associations for baseball, soccer, lacrosse, and football, senior leagues, and many, many tournaments. Bloomington Girls Fast Pitch Association hosts more than 50 home games and welcomes 43 teams, including four from neighboring states, for an annual tournament. And as Representative Coulter said, is also the home to the premier fast pitch tournament each year. So these were all constructed back in the 60s and the 70s, and they are fields that are definitely showing their age. In addition to the actual deteriorating condition of the fields with drainage and undulating surfaces, much of the field lighting is original and not very energy efficient. We also have dugouts and other facilities that are reaching a point of being unsafe or crumbling around the users. So the athletic field renovations will provide a better experience for both players and spectators. The project has three major components: constructing safer playing surfaces with better overall experience for players, creating high demand for field usage and providing the ability to handle it, replacing and adding field lights with modern LEDs to save energy and increase the capacity of the fields by up to 40 games and 160 practices per field. Which is, you know, the reduction in the energy use is consistent with our city's articulated sustainability goals, which are ambitious, and also to replace those failing dugouts and adding new field fencing, as well as other site amenities and improvements. Now, one of the things that we look at is who are using these fields and whether they are deserving of state funds. The Dred Scott Playfield has 325,000 visitors each year. This is data that was drawn January through September of last year, so it isn't even inclusive of a full year. 57% of the users are coming from outside of Bloomington. The Gene Kelly Playfield, 93,000 visitors, and again, 56% of the users coming from outside of Bloomington. And for Valley View Park, 175,000 visitors, with 65% of them being non-Bloomington residents using the Herbeck Fields, 46% non-Bloomington residents using the Red Haddocks Field. This is a $19 million total project for these three complexes to be overhauled. And with the many aspects that Bloomington does to serve regional needs, in addition to the hospitality that Representative Coulter talked about and our contributions as an economic engine, we also serve a really important role in the recreation and leisure aspects and amenities of this region, and are hoping for your support by about a quarter of the project cost, and would certainly appreciate any questions that members may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Representative Coulter. I'm just wondering, I get Dred Scott and Valley View, but what Gene Kelly is this?
Representative Coulter.
To be honest, Mr. Chair and Representative Roll, I don't know. I don't believe it's the actor, singer, and dancer, but I am not familiar with who the Gene Kelly is that this is named for.
City Administrator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl. Gene Kelly is the longtime Director of Recreation and Parks in the City of Bloomington, and the city chose to honor him with the naming of the field after he retired.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. Does he dance in the rain, too?
I've heard he is an excellent dancer, or was that way.
Quick close the comments, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again, members, for your indulgence. You know, again, I'm here not just really advocating for my community, but as we have detailed, I think today, to really recognize that Bloomington takes on a significant load for Minnesota. These projects represent an opportunity to invest in assets that have tremendous economic value for our state and tremendous personal value to our neighbors. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and members, if I may, I ask the page to distribute a flyer that demonstrates the projects to you, too. So you can see.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 5215, Chair Nelson. Welcome. Please proceed. And Chair Nelson, I understand you have an amendment A1 for reference. Please proceed with the amendment.
Yes, we have the A1 amendment, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. This bill is the previous city had 90,000. This is for the city of Osceola, which has about 2,700 people in our population. So big city, small city. There are some of those still in the metro area. With redistricting, I took over representation of Osceola, drawn into that district. Anyway, this bill has to do with a fix from last year's bill. Last year we had a bill that bonding project that came forward. There were some problems with how it could not be funded. This is replacing that project with this new current project. And with me, I have the city administrator from the city of Osceola.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, your chair. Lee, my name is Riley Grams. I'm the city administrator for the city of Osceola. We have three smaller projects included here. The first is the Central Avenue Reconstruction Project. This would be replacing three blocks of deteriorating downtown sidewalk pavers, which has resulted in a substantial public pedestrian safety concern, replacing aged boulevard trees, and replacing the ADA pedestrian ramps with all new sidewalks, new boulevard trees, irrigation systems, and again replacing those ADA-compliant pedestrian ramps. The downtown Central Avenue is really the focal point in the core, the heart of the city, so this is really an important project. Secondly, we have some improvements to the city's public works facility. Originally constructed in 2001, the building requires many safety and security improvements. This would include new perimeter security fencing and user-controlled security gates, building and security cameras, all new cold storage addition, improved office space, staff locker rooms, and improved storage overall, and then finally, re-roofing the entire structure. And then finally, money for a pre-design and final design costs for a future renovation or reconstruction of the Osceola City Hall and the public safety building, which does include both the police and fire departments for the city of Osceola.
Thank you. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, close the comments. Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for hearing the bill. Again, Osseo is a small city that's surrounded by larger cities, but they have a very small tax base, and this will allow them to use the money that we got in last year's bonding bill to do bonding projects or do some other projects and fix the mistake that we made last year.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Next on the agenda, House File 4469, Representative Katisa Watun. Welcome, Representative. I understand you have an amendment for us to reference. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yes, my amendment just changes the request from cash request to general obligation bonding, and it removes the trunk highway portion of the bill since that's not under the jurisdiction of this committee. So I appreciate your willingness to hear House File 4469, and this bill requests funding for the general obligation portions of the intersection of Highway 5 and County Highway 4 in Eden Prairie. This intersection is an incredibly busy, regionally significant intersection used by Minnesotans. It's not a local Eden Prairie project. As we've seen, the population of Carver County continue to grow out into Representative Ream and Representative Nash's districts to the west, and I think even closer to Representative Myers's district. This path goes north and south to Eden Prairie High School, so there's a lot of impact on local traffic through the area, and we also need public safety improvements. So the bill asks the committee to provide those general obligation portions of funding, and if briefly, Mr. Chair, you would permit, I have with me the Eden Prairie Public Works Director Robert Ellis.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Council Committee members. My name is Robert Ellis. I serve as the Public Works Director for the City of Eden Prairie. I've got a little bit of information here about House File 4469. It is a request for $2.5 million for the City of Eden Prairie to complete environmental review, design, and right-of-way acquisition necessary to convert the intersection of MnDOT's Trunk Highway 5 and Hennepin County's Highway 4 into an interchange. Conversion of this intersection into an interchange was recommended as a high regional priority in Metropolitan Council's 2023 Intersection Mobility and Safety Study due to the occurrence of over 100 crashes in the last 5 years, including the passing, unfortunately, of a pedestrian in 2023. The project will also make safety and mobility improvements to the Tier 1 Regional Bicycle Transportation Network, which is located along Trunk Highway 5, where it intersects with County Road 4, and ultimately connects with the Minnesota River's Bluff Regional Trail less than a half a mile to the east of the project area. Once completed, the project will improve access and mobility for all users of Southwest Transit, as Trunk Highway 5 is the connecting road between our two major stations in Chanhazen and Eden Prairie. This improvement will also aid end-of-line users for the Green Line LRT when that opens, as the last station is located just 2 miles east along Trunk Highway 5. And finally, freight carriers would see improved service delivery along Trunk Highway 5, which is a Tier 2 freight corridor in the metropolitan area. I want to point out that there are no expected negative impacts on BIPOC communities as a result of this project. Improved safety and mobility was seen as a positive improvement for users. Right-of-way acquisitions are expected from businesses located nearest the intersection, which are largely national and regional corporations. Other communities typically marginalized due to disability, age, or low income are not expected to be impacted either. Once completed, the project would improve safety and access to commercial and recreational services for several marginalized groups. Within a half mile of this intersection, there are 6 residential developments that provide housing for residents with low to moderate incomes and senior housing, which includes affordable senior units. Several of the senior developments are home to residents that have limited physical mobility and transportation options, which this would help correct. And the project will also mitigate transportation greenhouse gas emissions created along this corridor. It is expected that emissions caused by congestion idling will be reduced. It is also expected that sidewalk and trail improvements will make safe, convenient, and accessible connections between Eden Prairie High School, the Eden Prairie Community Center, both which are located 1 mile north of this intersection, with the various residential buildings, senior living centers, commercial and retail properties located in all 4 quadrants of the intersection. Thereby, we're expecting a reduction in total vehicle miles traveled. As was mentioned previously, improvements to this corridor will also enhance the speed and reliability of service for Southwest Transit riders as they move between the 2 stations in Eden Prairie and Chanhazen. These improvements would also improve access to the nearby Green Line LRT off of Trunk Highway 5 at Southwest Station, which connects Eden Prairie and communities west of Eden Prairie and Carver County to the many bus and LRT connections across the metro. This concludes my comments. I'll end by thanking the committee for its time and attention and hearing this important issue today. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, any closing comments? Representative Cortez Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was a great first experience in your committee.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 4735, Chair Howard. Welcome, Chair Howard. Please proceed.
Hello, Chair Lee. Members of the committee, House File 4735 is the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency policy bill, and so that probably leaves you wondering why am I here in capital investment. We are here out of the abundance of caution with our House rules because there is a provision in the bill related to Minnesota Housing's debt capacity, and we have folks from Minnesota Housing on hand or staff that could answer specific questions about that. But really, this is a technical stop in this committee, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Chair Howard. So members, I will look to bring your attention to the section that, or maybe Chair Howard has it in front of you, just so that we can see it, and if there's any discussions, if not, then we can get the chair going. Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Lee. The provision that we're the triggers this committee stop begins on line 8.3, subdivision one related to the debt ceiling at Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. This isn't a debt ceiling that's is about geo bonding. It's about the internal debt capacity and how the agency uses debt to finance their any number of single family home products, etc. But that's the provision that we're talking about.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howard. So $7 million, is that the ceiling then?
Chair Howard.
Chair Lee, it's $7 billion. We go from $5 billion to $7 billion. And the reason, as I understand, for Minnesota Housing for the Change is we are financing more loans for folks to buy homes. These are dollars that come back to Minnesota Housing, so it's different than traditional geo bonding. But as we and as the agency takes on more efforts to utilize their financing to support more growth of housing, more growth of home ownership opportunities. That's why they're requesting this change.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howard, thank you for that explanation, and sorry that I missed a few zeros.
Quick call, Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Representative Howard. Does this affect the state's borrowing ability, this $2 billion extra?
Chair Howard.
Chair Lee and Representative Scraba, I don't believe it does. It does not, but for the exact technical answer, I might phone a friend to staff or otherwise.
Representative Scraba.
If you could get back to me on that, that'd be fine. I don't need to know now. But okay. Also, Chair Lee, will the adjustments in income on the rent limits and the broadening of eligibility for agency programs, are they going to go to the most in need? Is this the goal, to get the dollars to the most in need, the people in need?
Chair Howard.
Chair Lee, Representative Scraba, I'm not sure I exactly track. But if the question is, with this additional debt capacity, how will these resources be targeted?
Yes.
In a sense, the agency has programs that are kind of, if you qualify, you come and access these programs. And so with more resource potential, we could serve more folks. But they're already structured in a way that are targeted to folks that, if not for these resources, might be shut out of an opportunity to own a home, et cetera. So they're targeted well, and this provides a little more flexibility to make sure they continue to meet the needs of Minnesotans.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. So to your earlier questions, that's the same question that I posed for our nonpartisan staff who happens to not be here today. And so I will make sure to forward that information to members of the committee so that you know. And I think the short answer is that this will not really impact how much we could bond for. I think the concern was just, you know, kind of to that point, how would it impact guidelines too as we look forward to our future borrowing capacity, and we can forward that to you.
Thank you, Chair.
Closing comments, Chair Howard.
Chair Lee, no closing comments. I know you have a big agenda. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Next on the agenda, we have Chair Hassan, and the bill is drafted and will be introduced, and so that's why we don't have the House file in front of us, and the language that we'll be taking a look at is code CG373. Please proceed, Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File XXX. this is a bill that we passed last year. So we passed a bill for Isuron, which is a nonprofit in my district, for design, pre-design, design, and acquisition of a building in my district. And then we run into a problem. We found out that they can't dig the basement. The basement, the space used to be a gas station, so they can't dig the basement. And in order to do that environmentally consciously, they would have to spend millions and millions of dollars that they don't have. So we're coming back to say, you know, the building, we're not going to touch the basement, so the basement stays as is, inaccessible, and the money would be whatever money that they have used will be paid on what funding will be used for renovation of the building, and then the rest, instead of building the basement and making it a specialty care center, they're going to find a different space to do that. That's basically what it is. Isuron is a nonprofit in my district that works with women. It focuses on women, but works with families on woman empowerment, woman health, and woman self-sufficiency. With that, Mr. Chair, I have the executive director who's going to explain more and do more just on this bill.
Welcome, Chief Executive. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Assalamu alaikum. Good morning, Chair Lee and member of the committee. Thank you for giving me a few minutes to explain why Isuron's appropriation needs to be amended. My name is Fortune Wally. I'm the CEO of Isuron, one of the trusted, consistent, and reliable ethnic organizations in Minnesota. On behalf of many members of our community, I want to convey our gratitude to our authors of the bill, Reverend Hassan, Senator Hoffman, committee chairs, and committee members, of their work towards economic justice for our communities. About 23 appropriation, as Reverend Hassan said, the construction of 1600 East Lake Street is almost completed. The last punch out, as the architects and construction people say, it will be happening on April 15th. The basement was one of the disappointments because that building, as you can see one of our handouts, it's a hub for our families that come from 6-7 zip codes, almost 5 different counties. But our architect and our construction workers have found that it will be impossible. Not impossible, but we'll be spending a lot of money that we'd rather use for a different building. And so so that's where we were asking the remaining funding to be utilized to purchase another building and another space. One of the most critical, as you all know, Minnesota's health disparity, maternal infant mortality rate is very high in the community I come from, which are both immigrants and women of color. They have a high maternal infant mortality rate issues, low reproductive health accesses, and so our specialty wellness center will be critical to have to build that. So I appreciate it, and I know where I'm going to stick to my few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, just for all of you to know, so the first part of the bill, it is included in the modifications bills that's on the House floor today. And then why I'm asking for Chair Hassan to come in is for Part B, Paragraph B, because I think that's going towards the new projects. And so we want to make sure that there's a hearing from that second piece. And so that's why we didn't include that as part of the modifications. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you for clarifying that. I was thinking, can't we just do that as a correction? But you're right, it is a separate. but one of the questions I have is the soil around the project is contaminated. Is that correct?
Director.
That's what they told us. Okay. Yes.
Representative Scraba.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That's good. Thanks.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, quick closing comments, Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll save some time for you. It's a good bill. Please support.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Next on the agenda, we have Representative Frazier. The bill is coded CG-382. My understanding is that the bill will be introduced here, pretty soon here. Representative Frazier, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the bill, it has been dropped in the hopper last week. We had a mix-up at the beginning of session. I had a transition LAs that was for the delay. Yes, we had this proposal back in December, so I appreciate you for accommodating us and allowing us to come here today for the presentation. This bill will be seeking resources for the maintenance of our New Hope Village golf course. This golf course was built back in the 1960s. The city was not an issue owner, but the city does own the golf course now. And as you can imagine, a golf course built back in the 1960s, there is some maintenance that needs to be done to ensure that this golf course remains viable for many generations to come. The importance of this bonding request is that, you know, we are in a pretty good spot in our market in terms of offering a par three golf course in the area. It allows access for individuals to play a sport that oftentimes is cost prohibitive for individuals to get into. We have about 36% population of people of color in the city of New Hope. That is one of the communities that is often excluded from participating in this sport. I think it's a good sport. I try myself. I go out and hit some balls around sometimes, oftentimes in a pond, but I try. But it does allow for access, and I've seen people really enjoy the game and enjoy the sport when they have the opportunity to have access to it. I do have our city manager here to talk more about the project, but we're really hoping that we can get the resources to ensure that this place remains viable, and it is an asset in our community. Thank you.
Welcome, city manager. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Reese Berthoff, and I am the New Hope city manager. I'll be remiss, but with me today I do have Mayor Kathy Hemkin, New Hope's Director of Park and Recreation, Susan Rader, and our Recreation and Facilities Supervisor, Mark Severson. I know you're going to have so many questions. I brought the whole team here so that we can answer them for you. I want to express my gratitude to the opportunity to request state funding for several improvements to the New Hope Village Golf Course, which serves the larger region. In the information provided, you will find details about our request, the course, and letters of support emphasizing the importance of this facility, not only for New Hope, but also for our residents of our surrounding communities. The New Hope Village Golf Course is a public 27-acre, 9-hole par 3 golf course. Private investors opened it in the 1960s, but the City of New Hope purchased it in 1971. This beautifully maintained course attracts golfers from all over the Twin Cities metro area, providing an affordable opportunity for people of all ages and abilities to learn and enjoy the game of golf. The significance of par 3 courses cannot be overstated. They serve as the most critical tool in expanding the game of golf. Par 3 courses are an excellent way to introduce the game to new players, and they offer affordable opportunities to enjoy the game, making golf accessible to everyone, regardless of their background or financial status. Moreover, people of all ages and skill levels can enjoy playing on a par 3 course. New Hope Village Golf Course is one of only a handful of par 3 courses in the Twin Cities metro area, with the others being in Brooklyn Center, Roseville, Mendota Heights, and Burnsville. The New Hope Village Golf Course provides a central regional location in the metro for golfers to meet for a round of golf. With over 800 participants from more than 50 metro area cities, our junior, senior, men's, and women's leagues offer an excellent opportunity for golf enthusiasts to come together and enjoy the sport. You'll notice in our handout that actually we have more league members from other cities than we do have from New Hope. At the New Hope Village Golf Course, we offer affordable lessons and programs specifically designed for beginners and juniors. Our course is also a popular and affordable venue for tournaments and outings for regional businesses, schools, nonprofits, and families. In addition, our patio and off-season clubhouse rentals are perfect for graduation and birthday parties. We are requesting $1,506 $1,506,828 for course improvements for this regional asset. Of that amount, $1 million is roughly to install a new irrigation system. The irrigation system currently uses dates back to the 1960s when the course was built. I don't have to tell you every once in a while it will leak. As a result, many glue connections, plastic elbows and tees, shutoff valves, and quick couplers have failed or are failing. Additionally, many of the sprinkler heads do not operate properly, resulting in water loss and inefficient use. We are seeking an additional $302,000 towards paved cart paths. We have noticed a significant increase in the use of cart paths on the course. Unfortunately, this has caused damage to the existing gravel cart paths. Potholes have formed, posing safety concerns for riders and causing harm to the turf when the paths become impassable. In this proposal, there are 6,740 feet of cart path to be paved with bituminous. We're seeking $194,000 towards new cold storage. We've added up to a fleet of 18 golf carts and we need a place to store them. The course's current maintenance shop was built when it had only two golf carts. Since the course now operates a fleet of 18, the new structure will provide ample space for all the equipment. The City of New Hope aims to provide its residents and visitors an updated, safe, and affordable opportunity to learn the game of golf. Golf has undergone changes over time, and we need to keep up with those changes to offer affordable golfing opportunities for people of all ages and abilities. As the city and surrounding communities have grown, many of the golf course users have matured. And the role of par 3 golf courses has become more critical in expanding the game of golf by introducing it to new players. Many experienced players who can no longer play bigger 18-hole courses want to play our par 3. Therefore, the par 3 courses not only expand the game of golf to new users, but extend the opportunity to golf to seniors and individuals with physical limitations. Thank you for the time to hear us today, and we appreciate your consideration of our request and are happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, City Manager. So my understanding is that the request of 1.5, that's the total cost. And so if we were to look at a local contribution, that will be roughly just a little bit over $750,000 then?
We do have CIP programming in place that will contribute local funds to the project in the neighborhood of $750,000.
Thank you. Members, any additional questions? Representative Grasso.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. When you described your game, that perked my ears because that's my game. Just hack and slice, sod removal and tree limbing.
So. Thank you, Representative Grasso. I'm pretty sure Chair Pawlowski might be willing to give you guys some pointers. Quick closing comments, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just this final request, I think, is for a worthy cause. Like I said, we want this golf course to be around for generations to come.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have House File 4862, Representative West. Welcome to your committee, Representative West. Please proceed.
I've been upgraded. It's my committee now. Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 4862 is a bonding request for one of the cities in my district, Columbus. It is a city of less than 5,000. It does not receive any local government aid. It doesn't receive local municipal street aid, and it also pays into the Fiscal Disparities Fund. So they're put in a pretty awful budget decision. There's not many cities that can get that little help from the state. So this request is for $615,000 to finish a road that was actually funded by a previous bonding request by Forest Lake to connect the two communities. Right now there's a freshly minted road that goes up to the county border and then turns into a cow path, I believe is basically what it's been described as. And it's a right off the I-35W. So it has great regional impact by connecting two communities, and it is adjacent to the freeway, and it is eligible for geo bonds because it is a local road. The City of Columbus also has put $1.5 million to finish part of this section we're looking at. So they've already prepared for it. They've put in more than half to get it done. And because of their budget situation, they're one of the few cities that don't get any benefit from the state, really, in terms of dollars. This is a very reasonable request at only $615,000. And I also have the mayor of Columbus with me to also speak on the issue.
Thank you. Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Jesse Prainer, the mayor of the City of Columbus, Minnesota. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. I will make my remarks brief. The City of Columbus is requesting $615,000 for the North Hornsby Street Improvement Project. North Hornsby Street, which currently carries about 2,500 cars per day, is what you would call kind of the east frontage road on 35W or 35 going north, and it goes through Columbus and then on to Forest Lake, to the Forest Lake exit. In 2023, the Forest Lake City obtained $4.5 million for the bonding bill to reconstruct the northern portion of the street, which is located in Forest Lake. However, they did not include the last 1,200 feet of Hornsby Street that's located in Columbus. So when the project is completed, Forest Lake's $4.5 million will enhance safety with a wider road, an 8-foot wide trail for bikes and hikers, and it seems senseless to leave the remaining 1,200 feet of cow path in the south end of the Hornsby Street as it approaches the I-35 freeway exchange in Columbus. So Columbus has already been to MnDOT and requested funds from the LRP program, and we were not approved. We were told that the funding requests from all the cities this year outstripped the availability by a ratio of 4-1. And so, therefore, we're requesting that you would please include $615,000 in the bonding bill so that we are able to complete the Hornsby Street project properly. This project will serve both the cities of Forest Lake and Columbus and as a frontage road along I-35 for the next 30 to 40 years. And we have some diagrams if anyone would have questions about how this all lays out or anything like that.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, close the comments. Representative West.
I am shocked. Representative Scraba did not ask a question, but I'll allow it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative West. Last bill of the agenda for today, House File 3561. Chair Joaquin. And I see Representative Kraft here, too. So, Representative Kraft, if you want to join them over at the lectern, go for it. Welcome, Chair Joaquin. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members, for hearing House File 3561 today. This is a bonding bill for an important regional project in St. Louis Park. A little bit about St. Louis Park. They are a first-tier suburb founded in 1852 and incorporated in 1886. This project's at the intersection of Minneapolis and St. Louis Railroad. And there are many more railroads in St. Louis Park that kind of divide up the community. This bill covers a project near the intersection of Louisiana Avenue and Oxford Street, just south of Highway 7. The roadway actually connects Highway 7 to County Road 3 that we also call Excelsior Boulevard. The project is needed to repair existing infrastructure that was constructed last in 1973 and is a major thoroughfare that brings over 12,000 employees to the area, including St. Louis Park's biggest employer, which is Methodist Hospital. The project will improve walkability and connections to transit, as well as the Cedar Lake Regional Trail in the area where there's just over 1,000 affordable housing units. It will also put new infrastructure in place to remove pollutants from the Minnehaha Creek watershed and from Minnehaha Creek prior to its discharge into the Mississippi River. Members, the cost of this total project is $13.3 million, and the city is requesting $6.65 million in this year's bonding bill. With that, I will turn my testimony over to Mayor Nadia Muhammad, here from City of St. Louis Park, as well as Deb Heiser, who's here just in case we have technical questions. She's the engineering director for the City of St. Louis Park. And I'll let me test fire, catch your breath here, and then.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members of the committee. Apologize, I am coming out of a really nasty cold, so I may have to pause once in a while to catching my breath, but my name is Nadia Muhammad, and I am the mayor of St. Louis Park. It's both an honor and a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss our community's investment in the Oxford and Louisiana area. Having immigrated to St. Louis Park about 20 years ago, and being a long-term resident, I can attest to the uniqueness and the beauty of our city. Of course, I may be a little biased. Over the past two decades, our population has grown significantly, particularly in two significant, in two key demographics, people of color moving to the suburbs and senior citizens. Everybody gets old, right? With many suburbs, like many suburbs, we are also facing the challenges of aging infrastructure, with much of it dating back to the 1950s. However, we are actively striving to adapt and develop to meet the needs of the evolving, to meet the needs of our community. It is this need that brings me here today to advocate for the project before you all. This is a regionally important project that will increase the, increase transportation access, improve neighborhood livability, and provide environmental benefits. Sidewalk construction will fill existing gaps in the network. This will enhance transit and pedestrian accessibility for the residents in the area, along with more than 12,000 employees for the Methodist Hospital. This regionally important hospital is just two blocks from the project and serves the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. Creation of connection to the homes, nearby trails, businesses, and parks will improve livability for residents in the area. Air quality will improve not only through roundabout construction that reduces vehicle emission, but also through safer access to walking, biking, and transit alternatives. Environmental benefits include both pollution reduction and promotion of climate resiliency. New infrastructure will also remove pollutants, preventing the new, give me one second, apologies. Sorry, y'all. I was really committed to make sure that you guys know how excited I am at this project. So I came just for that. Environmental benefits include both pollution reduction and promotion to climate resiliency. New infrastructure would improve pollutants, preventing them from reaching Minnehaha Creek. And since the creek drains into the Mississippi River, these upstream improvements will improve safer drinking water for millions of people. Regional flood storage will protect critical infrastructure from flooding, including Methodist Hospital and public roadways. We believe this project to be of regional benefit far beyond St. Louis Park. Nearly 5,000 vehicles use this road, and of that, 83% of those are from outside of St. Louis Park. This project will significantly contribute to reducing travel delays, creating connections, protecting the environment, and improving infrastructure. The total cost of the project is $13.3 million, and we are asking the state to fund 50% of the project costs, with the rest being matched by local funds. Thank you again, Chair Lee, and thank you for your consideration, and thank you for being allowing me to be here, even though I promise you I'm not, you know, just coming out of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, close the comments. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you for your time and attention today, members. The project renews a heavily traveled intersection that is a regional asset connected to a hospital with a large employer. It enhances connectivity to transit and a regional bike trail and provides new infrastructure to remove pollutants from Minnehaha Creek. Members, I would love your support for this project as you continue to put together your bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Members, before we adjourn for today, I do just want to note for the record that there has been a request from a member of the public regarding the posting of the hearing for today and some of the accessibility issues with regards to streaming and the overflow room or whatnot. And so we'll be making sure to connect with House Public Information Services that any public posting on the website or future streaming of any committee hearings actually have some accessibility factor into that so that members all across the state can join us. And we will not be having a committee hearing on Wednesday because of the e-break, and so I wish you all a happy little break before we reconvene next Monday. With no further business before us, the meeting is adjourned.